From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Today's guest on Naps Chat is Naps Executive Vice President Chuck Mulledor. Welcome to Naps Chat, Chuck.
Thank you, Bob. Great to be here as always.
We will be discussing a variety of issues today, including the almost concluded 2022 election season, the November 10th Postal Service Board of Governors meeting, and the November 16th hearing before the House Oversight Subcommittee on Government Operations. That hearing dealt with postal preparedness for the 2022 peak season. Chuck, let's start with the 2022 election. Neither the House or the Senate will include meaningful partisan majorities, though political pundits declared earlier in the campaign that the Democrats would suffer an electoral shellacking by a so-called red wave. The red wave really became a ripple, and it only impacted the House of Representatives. One of the byproducts of the electoral outcome was that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Majority Leader Steny Hoyer decided to depart from the House leadership. Could you talk about how narrow majorities in both the House and the Senate affect NAPS and its legislative agenda, if at all?
Yeah, Bob, again, thanks for having me on this week. And before we start, I just wanted to give a quick thank you to our veterans. You know, we're past, a little bit past Veterans Day, but I always want to thank our veterans and all the sacrifices they and their families have made for our country and the freedoms that we enjoy, including this past Election Day, which is something a lot of countries don't have. Only because of the sacrifice of our veterans do we have the opportunity to enjoy free elections in this country. I've said it many times that we can all have our own political views on a variety of issues, and I'm sure we all do. When it comes to SPAC, though, and what we do here at NAPS headquarters, we care about how folks support NAPS as well as the Postal Service. So those are our two key priorities that we look for to decide who we're supporting, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, and we support both. We did quite a bit of support on both sides of the aisle this year. The split in the Congress, Republicans controlling the House, Democrats controlling the Senate. To me, we have to work with both sides no matter what. We have a very good relationship with the upcoming chairman of the committee, Representative Comer, who came to LTS last year, a good friend of NAPS, and I think we'll continue that relationship with him, as well as Senator Peters from Michigan on the Senate side. So I think our agenda will continue to move forward. We'll seek support on a bipartisan basis for those issues that are important to us. So for us, for NAPS, for SPAC, I think that we'll work through it no matter who's in charge of either house.
In the Senate, it's either going to be a 51-49 Democratic majority or a 50-50 Democratic majority with Vice President Kamala Harris breaking the tie. Mm-hmm. The House, as you said, we were looking at a majority of probably 221 to 214 by my estimation. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a couple of races still to be decided, but right. I think there were six races as we're recording this that are yet to be decided. And most likely it'll be a split 3-3. So we're going to end up with 221 to 214. So when we talk with our members of Congress or senators, every discussion counts. Like we say, every vote counts.
Right.
Every discussion will count because of these narrow majorities. So can you talk about how important it is for NAPS members really to impress upon their elected leaders the issues that we're going to bring to the table next year?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think our issues are broad bipartisan issues. I don't think we have issues that are exclusive to one party or the other. I think there's, as we saw with the postal bill passing last year, these are issues that affect communities all across the country. So when we go to the Hill in March of 23 with our agenda, it will be critically important that every person understands that one vote can make or break an important piece of legislation that's important to NAPS members, important to retirees from the Postal Service, and all federal employees. So there are a lot of headwinds out there we're going to have to push against, and some of the usual issues that we'll continue to bring forward. But You're right. It's so close right now that every single conversation with every single representative and senator could be the one that pushes the agenda forward or holds us back.
You had mentioned that Representative Comer will chair the House Oversight and Reform Committee with the Republican majority, and Senator Gary Peters of Michigan will continue to chair the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Mm-hmm. They are both familiar with NAPS issues.
Absolutely.
And they're both familiar with NAPS. What do we expect from them in 2023?
Well, I hope, and I truly mean this, I hope that there will be continued focus on oversight, not only of all government operations, but specifically of the Postal Service. I'm concerned that possibly on the House side, the committee could find itself in other areas that don't necessarily benefit our agenda, investigations and so forth. So I don't expect that to be that much of an issue in the Senate. So we'll have to keep on it. We have to keep our ears open and listen to what's going on and see what's going on. We'll be up there talking to them as we always do. We'll have our members talking to them locally to see how things are going, to impress upon them that no matter what's going on, there's a variety of postal issues and NAPS issues that are very important to us. And while we supported Representative Comer, we supported Senator Peters and others on both committees, you know, we expect them to be open to our agenda as well and part of their oversight process and part of the legislative process.
We've spoken about this in the past, and I know we've spoken this with our vice presidents, particularly Kevin Schreyer, the Michiana vice president, and Ed Laster, who represents the Pioneer region, about the importance that they will have because of their relationships, in the case of Kevin, with Gary Peters from Michigan, and Ed Laster from the Pioneer region because of his relationship and the relationships we want to sort of solidify with James Comer from Kentucky. Can you talk a little bit about that?
No, it's time for everybody. Look, it's time for everybody to get involved. It's good viewing sometimes to watch the legislative and political processes and the battles that go on back and forth. But this is how things get done. This is how change happens. And if we want to be leading the way as we have done, leading the way on those issues important to NAPS, those issues important to federal employees and federal retirees, we have to have a buy-in from everybody. It starts with us here in Virginia, Ivan and Jimmy and myself, you and all of our executive board members across the country leading the way. The leadership starts with us and with the board. And we're going to task the board this year in 23 with leading that agenda, not only here in D.C., but out in their local communities as well, because it's going to be an all-hands-on-deck as we move through 23 and hope to get some legislation done that benefits NAPS and postal employees, as well as in the 2024, which will be a huge year in terms of political activity. So it all needs to be everybody all hands on deck. There's no 2023 can't be, well, let's take a break. We got the postal bill passed and the midterms are behind us. Let's take a year off and see what happens. No, no time off. We're going to keep working and keep trying to make things happen for the benefit of our members.
Yeah, this is not a sabbatical year.
No, no sabbaticals.
We've been talking about the that Comer's going to be assume the get the gavel on the Oversight and Reform Committee. The Democratic leadership on that committee is still unsettled, with three members of the committee at this point competing for the ranking position on the Oversight and Reform Committee. Representatives Jerry Connolly of Virginia, Jamie Raskin of Maryland, and Stephen Lynch of Massachusetts are all NAPS friends, and they're all vying for that top Democratic slot. We expect the decision will be made by the Democratic caucus probably in early December. No matter who's elected, how do you think they will work with the Republican majority on the committee?
Well, interestingly, each one of those individuals you mentioned all have different temperaments. And we've seen those on display quite a bit. So I suspect that they'll do their job and work through as much of the agenda as they can. But I would expect that when there's areas of broad dissent or disagreement, I don't have any doubt that each of those three will make their feelings and their case known, perhaps in different ways, but all getting to the same point. But we'll keep our relationship with all three of them moving forward, no matter what happens, who gets the leadership position. But that's what's important to us, that we just maintain our relationship with these folks moving forward. Because, you know, things change, right? Democrats control one time, Republicans control the next time, and it goes back and forth. So we're all about building relationships with as many people as we can on either side of the aisle to represent the interests of our members.
Let's move to more broader perspective, and let's talk about NAPSA's role in the election, particularly SPAC. How did we do?
I think we did good. I mean, we were involved in 120-some races. That's a lot. And you and I talked to a lot of people that we didn't know because there were so many retirements and so forth that we had to meet people that we didn't know, Republicans and Democrats, that we didn't know much about. And we had to find out what their feelings were about NAPS, what their feelings were about the Postal Service, and so forth. So after all of that due diligence, and as well as the support that we gave to some longtime folks who are very open to us, we did 91% win rate. That means 91% of the people that we contributed to won their election. That's pretty good. I think that's pretty good, 91%. So, and some of that, you know, we had some disappointments there. I think we certainly supported Sherry Beasley in North Carolina running for the Senate. She fell a little bit short in that race. We supported Jay Chen out in California, 45. We were very impressed with Jay, but fell a little bit short in his race. Good people. Hopefully they'll be back and stay active in the process. We had some good late wins, right? A couple of late meetings we had with some folks that were running. One near and dear to my heart in the Akron, Ohio area from near where I'm from, who everyone told us couldn't win, Emilia Sykes. She had no chance. She couldn't win. We met with her. We were very impressed with her, and we helped her with a late influx of cash, I'll say, that she needed very much to get across the finish line, and she won. So very proud of her and the hard work that she put in, and proud of those folks back home in Ohio for pushing her across the finish line. So pluses and minuses. Look, we spent a pretty good amount of money here. I want people to know, and of course, there's no we're transparent. There's no secrets here. We spent over $370,000 in these midterm elections, and that sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money. But it's an investment in everybody's future who works for the Postal Service now and who's retired from the Postal Service as well. So we were out there. We spent the money. We did what we had to do, and I thought we were very successful with it.
When you hear the number $370,000, you think it's an astronomical amount mm-hmm. of money, and it is large, but you have to understand the postal unions are probably at the same time spending well over $1 million
absolutely
on this election. So, I mean, we're not as large a PAC, mm-hmm. a political action committee, like the NALC or the APWU. Nevertheless, we have been active, and we chose selectively.
That's right.
The race. I mean, there were folks like we were talking about in North Carolina. We played in a number of races, open seat races.
Yep.
It's not as though when we invested in campaigns that we invested in sure things or incumbents.
Right.
I mean, there
That's
are
right.
some PACs that only do incumbents.
Right.
We don't do that.
No, we went off out there a little bit sometimes. We weren't playing it safe. We evaluated who was best on our issues, and we supported them, not worried about, well, if the other side wins, how are they going to view us? Because we knew that the other side wasn't for us. So it wasn't like we were worried about that. So we played in a lot of those races, and I thought we did pretty good. I mean, we have some new friends now, the individual from North Carolina. Wally Nickel, I thought we did very well with him, wants to meet us and have a beverage with us when he gets to D.C., and we'll take him up on that. But we made some new friends, and that's what's important. That's what it's all about, solidifying our old relationships with people, with representatives and senators, and building new relationships with a new group that's coming in. So very proud of the effort and very thankful to the members out there who gave to SPAC, who continue to give to SPAC. Look, it's an investment. It's not spending money for the sake of spending money. It's an investment in these folks in Congress that will pass legislation that affect your job, in your retirement. It's very important. So we're going to continue to be players, and we're going to continue to need support from our membership for SPAC.
Yeah, and also you should our folks should know that we, in competitive races, we also invested in Republican members. And I'm going to point out Don Bacon from Nebraska, who was in a highly competitive race. He voted the right way on postal reform legislation. We supported him. It was a toss-up race, so it wasn't though we were, you know,
and he eked out a close win.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we're happy to do that. Look, people often accuse us, well, you like the Democrats more than Republicans. We like who supports us, whether they're red, blue, or whatever they are. And we have a long record of supporting Republicans. We've supported many this cycle. And I think it's going to benefit us as we move forward with this new Congress in January.
We have one more race, which takes place on December 6th, and that's the runoff election in Georgia between the incumbent Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock and the former University of Georgia running back Herschel Walker. In the first round, Warnock led Walker by almost 38,000 votes, but fell 0.6% short of reaching 50% of the votes, which would have been necessary to win in the first round. A Libertarian candidate garnered about 2.1% of the vote. So Walker and Warnock are going to go head-to-head in round two and decide not only the winner, but if the Democrats can have a majority without the tie-breaking vote of Vice President Kamala Harris. How important is this runoff to NAPS?
Well, so no secret here. We supported Senator Warnock in the general election. We've given him additional support in the runoff. Why? He supports NAPS. He voted right on the postal bill. He's a friend of ours, and we're going to continue to work with Senator Warnock to continue that relationship. So it's important. 51 votes versus 50 gives Democrats a majority on committees. It allows them not to have maybe one particular senator, who I won't name, but one particular senator to try to control the agenda in the Senate. So it's important. Now, again, we passed postal legislation with considerable Republican support in the House and the Senate. So I'm not saying that, well, we have to have the Democrats run the Senate because that's the only way we can get NAPS legislation through. That's not true. But Senator Warnock gives us a much better chance to continue to have good relationships with members of the Senate than Herschel Walker does. So that's why we're involved in that race, and we're going to continue to watch it all the way to the end and hope that Senator Warnock wins.
Interestingly, about the state of Georgia, and this will be a good segue on to my next question, is what important role absentee balloting and vote-by-mail absentee balloting plays in Georgia. One of the focuses of the end-of-year 2022 Board of Governors meeting and the House hearing was the Postal Service's performance in efficiently conveying absentee ballots from voters to the election authorities. How did we do? And I might just add, before you answer that, that former President Donald Trump once again derided vote-by-mail at his November 16th Mar-a-Lago presidential kickoff event and said the abolishment of such absentee voting was a personal issue for him.
Well, I think that speaks for itself, okay? I don't know that there's much more to say about that. So how did we do on delivering absentee ballots? Have you heard anything? Has anybody complained? Has there been anybody accusing the Postal Service of not delivering the ballots? So that's how we did. We did good because we did what we always do, which is deliver for the American public, deliver democracy for the American people. And everything else outside around that is just noise around the edges. It doesn't matter. What matters is the performance. And we, as always, and I say we, I mean everybody who works in the Postal Service, supervisors, managers, postmasters, those folks that we directly represent, as well as all the craft employees, the carriers, the clerks, the mail handlers, everybody pitched in, as always, and got it done. And the success is measured, I think, by the lack of noise you hear about the delivery of ballots this time. So once again, you know, job well done by the Postal Service.
The last, as I said, the last Board of Governors meeting was conducted on November 10th, and they elected, they reelected actually Ramon Martinez as the chairman of the Board of Governors and Anton Najjar as the vice chair. We're still awaiting presidential nominees for the expiring terms of Lee Moak and William Zolars. Now, the financial condition of the Postal Service improved as a result of the enactment of the Postal Reform Act, posting a one-time on-the-books income boost of $56 billion. However, storm clouds continue to be on the horizon as the result of inflation and unfair calculation of the Postal Service's pension liability and the shrinking mail volume. Could you talk about these headwinds as we move into 2023?
Well, I think the shrinking mail volume continues to be the narrative, right? It's been going on for well over a decade now, especially the shrinking first-class mail volume. So I don't see that stopping. I don't see that bottoming out anytime in the near future. I think it will continue to be an issue in terms of financing. I think the organization has made a commitment to package delivery. Concerning to me that Amazon has seen its package volumes decline over time. Layoffs of 10,000 employees due to lack of some volume in their system. So it's all very concerning for the Postal Service in the long term, as well as inflation. I mean, we all feel it, right? Gas prices at $3, $4, $5, $6, $7 a gallon. So it's very concerning what effects this might have on the economy. And we saw in 2007 and 8 the effect that a economic downturn can have on the Postal Service. So it's all very concerning. But, you know, the bright side is we got the legislation passed, right? We took $56 billion of unwarranted debt off their books. And that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. So we're going to work with them, and with this OPM calculation of how their pension liability is calculated, that needs to be fixed, and hopefully we can work with Congress if we need to. If OPM is bulky toward that, we can work with Congress to try to get that corrected on behalf of the Postal Service. So, you know, there's always headwinds. The winds never calm down; they just shift direction every now and again, but they continue to blow. And we just have to navigate the storms.
Talk about inflation. There were two indices that we constantly pay attention to. One is called the Consumer Price Index, but the other index is called the Producer Price Index.
Right.
And just so people understand, the Postal Service, the amount the Postal Service charges for its services increased by around 4.8% over the past year. The Postal Service's competitors, recognizing the cost that is involved in providing their service, increased their cost by 14.8%.
Yeah.
I think that's just something that there's a distinction between what our competitors charge, the increase, versus what the Postal Service's increase is.
Well, you know, our 4.8, and again, when I say our, you know, we're all postal employees forever, right? No matter how many years we worked there and retired, we're all postal employees. So our 4.8% increase gets a whole lot more attention in the media and everything else than UPS or FedEx or other groups' 14% increases do. So it's unfortunate. It's a fact of life, always been a fact of life. I do think that the Postal Service has made some decisions to increase rates that are justified. I think that there's costs into the system right now, especially with the pension liability and particularly with the inflationary pressures that the post office is under, to continue to increase prices at a reasonable rate. You don't want to start putting people out of business and then, you know, hurting mail volume any more than it already has declined. So it's just who we are as a post office. We get all the attention, good and bad, but certainly it's a great point that while our competitors continually raise rates at double or triple what we have over the past, we get all the attention.
Last question, Chuck. On November 16th, the House Oversight and Reform Committee subcommittee held a hearing on the Postal Service performance, and you shared our views, NAPS's views, with the committee at that time. Two of the areas that you talked about was the sorting and delivery consolidation initiative, center initiative, and the other thing was the vulnerability of mailboxes, particularly with regard to absentee ballots, but just generally. Could you talk a little bit about the testimony that you shared with the committee?
Yeah, I think it's important that members of the committee understand this S&DC process. And really, I think everybody needs to understand. Everybody who's listening to this podcast, everybody who works for the Postal Service needs to understand what this process is all about. Now, it's cloudy because they're not being, the Postal Service is not being very transparent about it. They're telling us a little bit as they go forward. We don't know yet what the staffing levels for EAS in these new S&DCs will be. We're not going to roll over like a companion management organization out there is doing, preparing its members for the worst, telling them we're going to fight layoffs for postmasters and so forth. We're not taking that tactic. That's not who we are. So we're going to fight this process at its inception, at its beginning. We're not going to wait for the ramifications of to fall upon our members and then try to help them all find a job somewhere. So we're going to be out front with it like we always are. We're the leaders. We're going to be out front with the oversight committee. We're going to make it clear to everybody on that oversight committee what this process involves. And most importantly, Bob, and you know this, we're going to hold people accountable on this 2006 PAEA, which requires that the Postal Service inform the public in these communities that are impacted and affected by these types of changes are made aware of them and have the opportunity for input, which they've been denied so far. They've been denied that so far. The American public largely does not understand that in many communities across this country over the next several years, their post office will have their carriers and their clerks moved to locations maybe 30 miles away. And they need to know that. That's why the law is written that way. So we're gonna hold the Postal Service accountable for that, and we're going to be pushing this issue as much as we can moving forward on the S&DC, and including with the Board of Governors as necessary, because I really don't believe the Board of Governors really understand or really know what's going on either. And in terms of the collection boxes, it all gets back to me down to the Postal Police issue, right? We have bills in Congress to reverse some poor decisions that were made on keeping postal police out of their true responsibilities, which is out protecting employees, protecting blue boxes. And we had the inspection service, right? Just tell everybody, hey, don't use the blue boxes. That should never happen. And I don't fault them for saying it, but there's a lack now of protection, because the postal police aren't out there by the rule and the decisions of postal leadership, senior leadership, to not have them out there doing what they can do and what they always do so well. So these are issues for the oversight committee that are there now, are going to be there next year, and they're going to be what are going to be important to us moving forward into 2023.
I want to thank NAPS Executive Vice President Chuck Mulliter for joining me this week on NAPS Chat. Thanks, Chuck.
Well, you're welcome, Bob. And I just want to take a quick minute to thank everybody out there and to wish everybody a happy and blessed Thanksgiving and a happy holiday season moving forward.
Also, I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on this week. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store, and more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, I too want to wish all of our listeners a happy, healthy, safe, and meaningful Thanksgiving.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make